Good morning, Arizona. Thank you for tuning in to Rosie on the House. 8 o'clock hour, we call the outdoor hour. We generally allow my son, we don't allow, but this is generally Romy's hour, where he heads the conversation revolving around landscape, gardening, irrigation, trimming, fertilizing, composting, gardening. Whatever it is that's going around and about in your yard, that's what we talk about this 8 o'clock hour. Romy is actually on the road with his entire family, two car seats, two preteens, mom and dad, all packed into the cab of a F-250, driving, left at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, got halfway to Barstow, going to, I don't even know where he's going. Is it Santa Rosa?
Yeah, Northern California.
And what's the event, the Heirloom Seed Festival?
That's what he was talking about when I did the show 2 weeks ago, and he was talking about he was going back to a Heirloom Seed Festival.
Maybe you will be able to tell me what a seed festival is.
Well, I'm not real sure. I would imagine that they're going to be having some field trials, and they'll be judging, and they'll be looking at different vegetable and flower seeds. I mean, do you know what an heirloom plant or an heirloom seed even is?
No, I can tell you what a heritage tree is.
Okay.
These heirloom seeds.
Does that count?
Heirloom seeds are basically taken from heirloom plants prior to World War II, so 1940, that were from plants that have been basically open-air pollinated their entire life. So it's about as pure of a plant as we can find. It hasn't been cross-pollinated, hadn't been, you know, injected with any of these GMOs.
Highly desirable.
Really?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of heirloom grains that are just highly desirable, too, going back to before they did all the genetic modifying of these seeds. And a lot of people are really wanting to get their hands on some of these very good quality products before we started genetically modifying them.
So my apologies to the Arizona homeowners. Romy's not here to host this hour. We're going to talk trees and trees and trees with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. John, thanks for joining us this morning.
You bet. Got lots to talk about after that big storm last week.
I bet we do, as well as Mr. Jeff Harper from Harper's Nursery as well, here to talk about trees, trees, and trees, which is really ironic that I'm in on the conversation, because generally when I'm talking trees, I'm talking chainsaw.
We need to educate you.
We list this as one of the Harper Historical Three Holidays, you want to focus primarily on fertilizing your citrus.
Yeah, Labor Day, Memorial Day, and Valentine's Day are kind of the three easy ways to remember when you want to fertilize your trees, your shrubs, your plants. We're coming out of this hot summer. The humidity's getting up. The temperatures are dropping down again. It's time to get some fertilizer on your plants, and they can push out some new growth and start feeling and looking a lot better.
You know, they say that if you fertilize in the fall, that your trees will use those stored nutrients for their spring push as well. And spring and fall are both equally good times for fertilizing. But as a rule, if you're going to fertilize your trees, the research shows that the fall fertilization is probably your most important because, as I said, the trees seem to hit the road running in the spring. Whereas if you are waiting till spring to fertilize, the trees are already pushing new growth from stored nutrients. And you're kind of after the fact, you know, to do your fertilizing in the spring and summer.
That's why it's really important that we do fertilize two or three times a year, because you always get those customers that their tree looks bad and you get some fertilizer on there and they throw some fertilizer on there and then they don't ever do it again and the tree never looks any better. And sometimes it takes a year or two of staying on top of it and feeding religiously three times a year before that tree does start to recover.
Right. Not being an avid gardener, you can walk down the fertilizer rows in any nursery or store and be pretty confused. How do you know which one to pick?
Well, you know, back in the old days, back when the, you know, Cooperative Agricultural Extension Service was writing their bulletins and they were educating us, they would always just push plain old ammonium sulfate, 2100, which is a fine fertilizer. That's basically
nitrogen.
Pretty much is all that plant needs is that actual pounds per nitrogen there. I would stay away from water-soluble types of fertilizers unless you're doing some kind of a, you know, deep root feeding injection. I would stick with a granulated, slower-release fertilizers, something that might have a higher nitrogen, that first number. By law, those fertilizers have to have three numbers across the top. It could be 0, 0, 10. It could be 1, 2, 3. It could be whatever. they have to list those, and those are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So you'd want a higher nitrogen number than you would say a phosphorus or potassium. All are important because they are macro or major nutrients, meaning that plant cannot survive without those three, where your micro or minor nutrients that don't necessarily have to be listed by law on the bag of fertilizer are your zincs, your irons, your coppers, your borons, your manganese, and all those things. Plants can survive without the minor nutrients, but they will perform better if given certain amounts of them.
And the process of putting that granular down is...
Well,
don't y'all like to pre-wet?
Well, you want to make sure that tree is not dehydrated. You want to make sure that it's had a drink of water, be it rain or you've pre-watered it. You never want to put it on dry. And then after you put the fertilizer on, you want to water it in again real well. And you want to put that fertilizer on from about, a foot or two out from the trunk out to the drip line of the tree and, 360 degrees around that tree. You want to put it on real evenly and water it in. Sometimes that's hard. And I'm sure John and I will get into some conversations about this, about, trees, planted in people's front yards that grow to a 40-foot wide canopy and only 10 feet of it is in their yard and the other 20 feet are in the neighbor's yard.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets difficult to fertilize and you got to be careful because if you put on set amount pounds of fertilizer that bag may recommend in that small of area, you're going to run into some problems where you're going to burn the roots of that tree because it's designed to go on uniformly. And like I said, half of it may be in the neighbor's yard. So unless you've got a good friendly relationship with your neighbor and you can go and knock on the door and go in the backyard and say, hey, could I throw some fertilizer
on my tree,
on your dirt to fertilize my tree? That's what it takes.
We've got that exact scenario, John. I think your crews are coming over to my house a week from Monday, right? We've mm-hmm. got that tree encroaching on our neighbor's yard. We're just going to take it down. She's been so sweet about it.
Yeah, sometimes.
But she was happy to hear I had you on the schedule. She was very happy.
You've been bumped back, though, because he's so busy with everybody's other.
Yeah, I bet the storms have caused a problem. Now, so those are the way you'd like to see us fertilize the plants. What's wrong with the way I do it? I fertilize not Labor Day, Memorial Day, and Valentine's Day. About every sixth Labor Day, I drill holes down with a post hole digger. I fill those holes with dry fertilizer, and then I just water it and figure it's good for another 5 or 6 years.
You know what? And there's probably really not a lot wrong with that. I mean, at least you're doing it. It's the homeowner.
It's
that
all in one, baby.
It's the homeowner that I go to, and I, what's wrong with my tree? Well, have you ever fertilized? And as we walk by the garage, I see 10 bags of fertilizer that have been sitting in the garage for 20 years that they've never opened up. And I says, it all starts with you using some of that stuff that you've got there. I actually fertilize my trees a little bit every month. I like to give them a small feeding.
Well, we live close enough. You could swing by.
Sure.
Well, I've got to interject something here. We, as arborists, we abide by the ANSI standards, which really specify that no fertilizing should be done unless there's a need for it. The adage is that, a prescription without diagnosis is malpractice.
Okay.
You really need to have a good reason for fertilizing. We want to be careful to not over-fertilize. Fertilizers all have a salt base, so we're adding salt to the soils. As Jeff was saying, you don't want to be burning the trees by over-fertilizing, putting down more than the trees need. A lot of times our native trees do not need fertilizing. We don't want to throw fertilizer down, kind of like vitamin C, it can't hurt anything. it's not like that. The trees really sometimes have really obvious presenting mm-hmm. micro or macronutrient deficiencies that you can identify without a soil sample. But quite often when we go to a new property, we will go to the added expense of doing a soil sampling, send it into a laboratory for analysis. It'll come back with a prescription for us to actually, maybe be able to apply those micronutrients as well as the macros and actually dial it in to get a specific fertilizer that's going to be appropriate for the trees. Another question, if we've got the time, is to talk about what happens in a turf setting. You have trees in a turf setting and the lawn's already getting fertilized regularly. People say, well, aren't the trees getting a little bit more, getting enough fertilizer? Research shows that the grass is really stingy. that grass root zone is quite deep and complex, and it takes up about 90% of any fertilizer that's applied.
90%?
Yeah, that's applied topically.
Wow.
Those trees are not going to be getting a whole lot of leftover from a good lawn. Which leads to what Jeff was mentioning about deep root fertilizing. At that point, that's when we use the deep root injector. If we can be fertilizing over a decomposed granite
yeah.
area, we just use, we'll sometimes use a subsurface application, dig some of the fertilizer into the soil around the trees, or put it just broadcast it onto the stone and water it in. But in a lawn setting where you want to get past the root zone of the grass to get down to some of the more significant tree roots, we'll use the deep root injector and use a liquid fertilizer.
Well, I'll tell you, I just returned from a week in Washington, D.C., and they take their root ball composting serious. I mean, they go to the outside of the drip line of their trees. There's no lawn up against the trunk of that tree. Yeah. I mean, 8 and 9 feet
sure.
radius.
Right. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
20-foot diameter. And it is all composted in that entire pile, and the grass stops in a very – and, I mean, that's not just some of the yards. That's every yard.
That's because they don't have Bermuda grass.
I think it's all St. Augustine.
It's pretty easy to do that when you've got a rye grass or a fescue or Kentucky blue or whatever, yeah. where it stops. It doesn't spread by stolons and rhizomes, and it's pretty tough to do with Bermuda grass.
Hey, we're going to come back and talk about the storm that hit while I was out of town. It sounded like it was a pretty big one. I woke up Tuesday morning at the Sheraton at Dulles Airport, and the first thing I'm greeted with is monsoon storm hits Phoenix, 3-inch rain and tornado style winds. And we're also going to take your calls at 1-888-767-4348. We've got Miss Barbara calling from beautiful Green Valley this morning to talk bougainvilleas, and Roland wants to talk about favorite trees. Jeff, he talked to you on air a couple weeks ago, and he wants to continue the conversation, and we have an open line for you as well. 1-888-ROSIE for you.